Thank you. Well, delighted today to welcome Luke Ambler and Nigel Lee for the latest episode of the Citation Podcast. So I'll let Luke and Nigel introduce themselves, but just quickly to give an intro to Luke. Luke's a former professional rugby player, a dad, storyteller, founder of Andy's Man Club, three times Ironman, award-winning mental health campaigner, motivational speaker, and has recently been involved in the government task force to help shape conversations and policy around mental health. So really, really delighted to have Luke here today. Also really proud that he's recently become a Citation client. So yeah, you know, big kudos and welcome to Luke. Equally delighted to welcome Nigel Lee, Citation's National Partnerships Manager. Nigel's been at Citation for over 20 years, regularly speaks to trade associations and the members about key issues that they're facing, and has seen a real shift in the conversation over the last couple of decades around mental health and the significance of it across many, many different sectors, as I'm sure we'll get into today. So welcome both. First of all, how are you doing? Are we all well?
Yeah, good. Yeah, all fun and games. Sun's out. You know, you can't complain.
I feel phenomenal after that intro. The intro you just gave me there made me, wow, yeah, it's a big, big intro. I'm just a proper normal bloke. So to hear all those things you said, it was really nice. I probably imagine someone from my team sent that, which makes it not as good, but it were really nice to hear all that.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, really delighted to have you here today. And I know that, you know, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people take a lot from today's podcast. And I'm really, really delighted that, yeah, we've got time to speak to yourself today. And the aim of today's conversation is to simply have a conversation about mental health. I know that the mission statement of Andy's Man Club is to be able to provide support to that one man in his time of need and help him see that his tomorrow can be better than his today. And I think we really want people to take something from today's podcast, and whether it's a business leader helping the team, whether it's them helping themselves, we want to hopefully give people some practical tips and start a conversation around mental health. So we're going to be looking at some general topics around mental health, as well as some specific to men's mental health with Andy being here. And we acknowledge that this is a sensitive topic and a complex topic. So we want to keep it honest, insightful, and there'll be loads of follow-up links in the description. So links to Andy's Man Club, to Ambler Training, and to other relevant bits of support. And if anyone's got any questions, we can by all means pass those on to Luke and the team. So without further ado, I'll ask yourself the first question, Luke. And I know as a former rugby player and a keen sportsman, you know, do a lot of warm-ups when it comes to, you know, getting prepared for those events. And do you have any tips for people when it comes to, I guess, getting mentally prepared for things, whether it's just simply getting set for the day or getting set for a big event? You know, what's your advice around mental preparedness?
So I think a lot of people in this space often talk about morning routine. I think, you know, having your morning routine right, getting yourself ready. But I'm a really big advocate for nighttime routine. I feel like what a lot of people struggle with, a lot of people, is sleep. Quality sleep, and I think that has an adverse effect on your day, doesn't it? So I could tell you right now to do a lot of positive stuff, meditate, go for a walk in the morning and ground yourself and the rest of it. But if you wake up feeling a bit shitty, aggravated because you had a crap night's sleep, it's, no matter what you do that day, it's just going to allow you a bit of cope and get by. What we want people to do is thrive in it. So we don't want people to just be surviving, which they're going to at times. We don't want just to be coping, because that's very vanilla, isn't it? We want people to wake up on a day-to-day with good energy, where they want to attack the day, whether it be in a business sense, life sense, parenting sense, relationship sense, want them to have that energy. So I think it starts with getting yourself in a good routine at night. And if we're dissecting that just a little bit more, you know, most people's periods of most negative self-talk and insecurities highlighting themselves is just before they try to go to sleep. The world quietens down, the volume in the mind goes up, and that's why it's so paramount that we really focus on self-talk, we really focus on bigging ourselves up, really focus on clearing the mind. And I think spending some time alone with your thoughts at times is really good. It's dangerous at times, you know, but actually spending that time and then get yourself in a nice routine. I'm a big advocate for heat before bed, so sauna, going for a sauna, going for a hot shower or a hot bath, getting in a nice cold room. And I'm really meticulous, because I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to sleep. Like, it's my biggest thing that I focus on. And I think once you've had a good night's sleep, you wake up feeling refreshed, energised, the day's yours, isn't it? And then anything you do after that is just a bonus. So the warm-up might be a boring one. It might not be out there and intangible that someone can go straight away and just, you know, do some meditation or journaling, but actually it's something that people should really start to focus more on really focus on getting that sleep to feel more re-energised on a day-to-day basis.
I mean, I think it's really, really interesting and really good shout. And yeah, definitely one. As a relatively new parent, I think I've got used to valuing sleep even more than I have in the past. And Yeah, I could definitely resonate with that. And obviously, you mentioned, you know, sport and your background in sport, and how influential has sport been in terms of your own personal, genuine mental health, and how important do you think it is in terms of building, you know, that sense of belonging, community? Yeah, and I know you're an arduous, keen sportsman as well. So, if anything you want to add to that as well?
Yeah, I think that the sporting analogy is really, really good. I think, you know, it's a different place where you can establish relationships, friendships. I know, you know, I played sport up until a few years ago when, you know, family life, kids got in the way. And then it was a bit like you were saying before. It was like, you know, I found that was somewhere where I could be myself in a sporting environment with my mates. When that kind of gets taken away, you know, I'm not 24 now, I'm 44, you know, so I can't play the cricket or the hockey or, you know, whatever it was at the level that I could do. And there was that little bit inside me that just kind of said, well, you know, I'm going to see some of these guys again, guys I've played with for 10, 12 years or so. They move away, you know, or even, you know, when I got told, okay, well, actually, you know, from a young county level cricketer, actually, well, you're not going to progress from that minor county level up to kind of, you know, a full-on county because you weren't quite that good enough and whatnot. Oh, I'm not going to see these guys again. You know, I'm really pleased for those guys who made it. But then, okay, well, I'll stick to my level. That was a bit of a, okay, well, maybe I wasn't as good as I thought I was, or this, that, and the other. But, you know, I'm encouraging my kids get into a sporting environment, build up some new networks, some new friendship groups. And obviously, you've seen that from a professional level. So you could probably echo that, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of bits in sport that I was thinking about when you were saying that. And one is my own personal story of when I went for an hard time when I was younger. My dad got me in a rugby, but not because it was an hard time, just because he loved rugby. But it probably came at a really good time for me to be able to express myself. You know, as a young man, young boy, running into people, tackling them and being in a team, and what were probably a bit of a flaw at school, being overweight, helped me in rugby. So, you know, it was quite a nice place to be able to go and truly be myself, and then became a professional rugby player. But you know what I think is important about sport? Yeah, this camaraderie is important, but it's doing tough shit. Like, and I think sometimes you're like, you know, at rugby, like, what actually makes you a better human is when you're doing like hills on a Saturday morning, or you've got to go to training early, or even now, like, my sporting background is, you know, of doing Ironman events. And I just think when your brain gets used to doing horrible things, so like, you know, if you go for a run you really don't want to, when you've got to go sit on a bike in your garage in pitch black, it's what I like to do, and I just sit there and I do 2.5 hours or whatever, your mind gets used to the art of surviving, and it understands, oh, it starts to build a confidence in itself that, oh, I survived that. And then when you have to go and do a podcast, or you have to go and do something in your business life, or have a difficult conversation, your mind already, like, subconsciously knows, I can get through it. So I think sport's a great analogy for many things: skill building, fitness building, health building, there's the fitness benefits. But I think there's an element that people often underestimate, like, you know, training for something, so I'm going to put in so many hours for one event, but that one event isn't really the thing that's important. And I'm currently doing, you know, all 5 UK man events for Andy's Man Club, and I put a message into a group last night just saying, like, getting on the red carpet is the nice bit when you cross over and say you're an Ironman, but that's not, that's just like the fluff side of it. What you do each and every day is what's important with sport, because ultimately you're rewarded in public for what you practice in private, aren't you? And I think that's really important, and that's the same analogy for having difficult conversations, whether it be in a business sense or a personal sense. It's allowing yourself to understand that, like, in anything, you only fail if you quit. So, like, you know, losing a rugby game, football game, don't really matter. But what it does is it teaches you all the lessons to take that forward. And I think that's what sport is. Sport's just a great analogy for life. And in so many different contexts, we could go on about this for hours and hours about how many different areas that is. And that's why I push my kids. I wouldn't say push, I pull them. I don't want to force them to go do something they don't want to do, but just this weekend I'm really excited. My daughter's representing West Yorkshire at England Nationals cross country, and it's going to be tough for her, but she'll get a lesson from that to then take forward in life. When her exams come, well, I did some tough shit before and I got through it, I'll get through this again. And that's what I want. That's my big thing. Go do some stuff that feel a little bit difficult, feel a little bit scary, and you'll start to understand that life's infinite, and we're going to be able before we know it anyway. So go do some shit you enjoy.
Yeah, love that. I think it's that kind of getting comfortable being uncomfortable, isn't it? And like I say, the reward from doing that. I often think of that whenever people do marathons, like you kind of mentioned, it's, you know, people see the 3 or 4 hours that you're doing the marathon, but if anything, that's the victory lap. It's all the hours and hours of early mornings, and obviously it's getting brighter now, but, you know, no doubt when you've been training over the winter, there's been a lot of getting up when it's dark and training when it's dark. So
Well, I've seen that from you firsthand, you know, when you've run past me at various 10Ks and whatnot, when I'm watching you, and it's all right, here you go, mate. And you look like you busted it. And then at the end of it, yeah, nice. You kind of revel in that kind of success bit, you know, and it's not easy to put yourself through that. You know, I'd like to point out that I probably was looking at the 5 Ironmans, but a severe knee injury has curtailed that ambition. So I'll let you take that one up now.
Thank you.
And Luke, would you mind, for those that have, you know, not familiar with Andy's Man Club and military training, would you mind sharing a little bit around the origin story of those and your kind of own mental health journey?
Yeah, I'll start with the beginning. So Humber Training were born 10, 12 years ago, and it was a desire to go into schools initially and help kids who I didn't think had a voice because might necessarily not needed a voice, the school might have thought. And, you know, everyone's heard stories of kids who need support at school from maybe tough upbringings, behavioural problems, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I always thought there were kids in class like me who were getting on with the work, who were a good kid, ultimately. I never had a problem with teachers. Teachers never had to tell them off. But they had lots going on. And I have to think when I was at school, there were lots going on from being an overweight kid, having a bit of an hard time. Mom and dad had broke up. Mom had a car crash, had a severe mental illness, shoving drop attacks. And there were all sorts of, I guess, traumatic things going on, but like no one at school would have really known about it. You know, even back that the court battle with my parents, you know, lots of different things. And I thought, I bet there's some kids in schools who could do with some of this positive mindset, not toxic positive and over the top, but like going in and delivering some real and run. And do you know what? A year 11 girl said something to me 2 days ago, and it's really stuck with me. And I thought this was a great analogy for what Amber training is. And what she said was, she says, can I give you some feedback on your session? I said, yes. She says, I've been to, because this group were for anyone from year 7 to year 13 who'd struggled at some point with the mental health or struggles. And she says, everywhere, I've been to everything that the school's offered for mental health. And it's always the same crap, she said. Go home, have a hot bath and have a hot cup of tea. She went, I've done that numerous times and that helped me deal with what's going on in my head. She went, what you do is you come in and don't sugarcoat it and you plant stuff in his head for us to think about. And you're never going to change anyone's life with a talk, right? But what you're trying to do is plant a seed of curiosity, a seed of a question that they then go, because everyone has the answer. Everyone knows how to get fitter, faster, healthier, stronger, better mental health. Like, but what we want to do is we want to try overcomplicate it so then it becomes overwhelming to have to deal with it. But actually, it just requires, one, someone showing you a way. And then two, ultimately, it's just about those better questions. And that's what we try to do. And I follow that year 11 girl said. So we're now going around doing this and escalating and doing 59 different prisons, you know, working with our country's most violent and vulnerable offenders, working with corporate companies, right up to blue chip companies, delivering this exact same message, whether it were a primary school BU workshop or it were a talk to a multinational company, right? It were the same thing. Be human, be unapologetically yourself and deliver these hard messages in a really real and raw way with having some fun along the way. And the reason why I say that is because if Andy's Man Club's taught me anything, and there's been a lot of my own journey that's already taught me this, but Andy's Man Club emphasised this, is that we're all going to die, right? And this sounds really dark at times. But I think the fact that we don't know when that's going to be, and the fact that sometimes we don't even think about it, we just sort of get up every day with this sort of belief that it could be, it's going to be a long way away, and it could literally be today on way home, touch wood, it's not, and it, but it could be any time, which then makes life so fucking beautiful. That I don't think we talk about enough. Like, how beautiful is it that we've been given this blessing of this thing called life? Which, when you track it all back, that's all I'm trying to do. I'm trying to show people that actually death's going to happen, but let's live each and every day. Which is why it's then really ironic that I guess the opportunity somehow came into my mind and in my presence, however you want to say, to start a suicide prevention charity, which is the complete opposite of what I'm talking about the appreciation of life. Because when you're in a really dark place and you want to take your life, what you've actually lost is hope. And then what you said earlier is what Andy's Man Club mission is what is hope? Hope is that tomorrow can be better than today. And I'm not on about while we're recording this that it's Friday. It might mean next week, next month, next year. All careers are built on hope. All relationships are built on hope. All financial goals are built on hope. Every single thing in our lives as human beings are built on hope that we can build a better hut. You know, originally, that we can create a village, we can create offspring. It were all built on this concept that it's going to get better. But we found ourselves in a situation, whether it's because society has become so much easier, because we've got so many more resources, or I'm not sure, that we started to lose hope that it can get better. Maybe, you know, times are hard and there's other factors in play. So what Andy's Man Club really wants to do is give guys hope that whatever they're going through right now, can get better. And how do you do that? Well, when you sit opposite another man who's been through a problem like you have, and he sits there and says, this is what I went through, but I'm doing much better. He's now the lighthouse on the shore in your dark times, because he's now showing you the way. How's he showing you? Because suddenly it's not, you are not alone. I know I'm not alone now, because he looks all right. And even if he's appearing to be all right, he still seems to be handling his shit. Now I could be in that situation. If you rewind that a little bit, you know, Andy clearly lost all hope. He lost hope that he was going to see his daughter again. He lost hope that his life was going to get any better. And as a result of that, Andy, my brother-in-law, Andy, had tragically took his life. And that then really spurred a movement and a mission to stop other guys going through that. But I'm often now known as the poster boy for men's mental health, where actually, you know, my actual passion for mental health comes from my mum, which is a woman. I have two daughters, I have a partner. And actually, mental health is everyone's responsibility. I won't say everyone's problem, it's everyone's responsibility. It's ultimately our responsibility, isn't it? And I think one thing that I'm really trying to do is flip the script that not only should mental health be seen in a positive light, but it's also should be an accountability element that, and if you speak to anyone, right, anyone who's ever hit a rock bottom, there's always a moment of self-reflection where they say, I've got to do something about this. Always. It's someone who were taking too many drugs, someone taking too much drink, gambling, addict, you name it, your relationship. There's a point where it comes in their life that go, okay, I can no longer blame the death of my mum on this. Okay, I can no longer blame that relationship on this. I've now got to make a change. And you hear it thousands of times here. I say to someone, what did you do? Well, I just said, I've got to do something about this. If you can get people to that point way before crisis point, what a beautiful thing to be able to do. Because we're catching them upriver rather than when they get to waterfall and it's all about to go downhill.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. I wonder if you've got any advice for business leaders. I know that increasingly businesses may operate, depending on the size of the business, like in a hybrid world or a remote world, and it can be hard to maybe sometimes spot the signs of someone in your team that is struggling. So from your kind of experience, have you got any advice for business leaders in terms of how they can break the stigma in the teams and I guess be the best employer that they can be?
So this might be controversial, it might be not, right? But I really dislike the saying, check in with a mate, right? Because everyone who's in this room now will have multiple friends, of different types of friends. Some friends you go running with, some friends that might go to yoga class with. Where does the line draw of who you check in with and when you check in, when you've got all your own shit going on? What I think we need to get to a point is where if I'm struggling, I can check in with a mate. I brought my arm today, brought my leg today. I wouldn't mind ringing my mate going, oh, I brought my leg. You know, you could pick me up and give me an hand, could you? We should be able to get to a point as societally where we can say, mate, I'm having a bit of a hard time with missus at the minute. My husband's left me. Kids are absolutely stressing me out. We should be able to get to a point where, like, you know, my anxiety's got that bad, I don't want to go. That's what we need to do. So I'll do it. So what we've got to do there is take ownership. So each individual within a business has got to take ownership, or in life, they've got to take ownership. But then what the company's got to be able to do is if I'm vulnerable enough to be able to come and tell you that as my leader, that you know what to do with that, which isn't fix it. But as a leader, you've been so used to, because that's what your job is. Your job as a leader, you work your way to a leadership because you fix problems, and what happens is the more you move the ladder is, and it's what people don't understand in leadership often is that the problems just get bigger the further up you go, right? And because you've got to deal with more problems. What you're not got to do here is fix it, because actually someone's chosen you because for a reason, because they felt that you might be the one that could get it, right? They don't want you to fix a problem, just want you to listen, right? And where the line's got to come there is once they spoke about it and thing is, you are busy, you are running a business. You might not always be able to be that person's crux, but if you could just be there and be empathetic, not sympathetic, empathetic, and show a level of understanding, because I ain't met a person yet that means through some form of shit. So if a leader can hold their hand up and say, you know what, and I sat with a beautiful team yesterday. These are MDs of massive insurance companies. And when we started talking about this and rather than this about leadership, three of them opened up on something personal, which I won't say right now, but they opened up on something personal, where two of them at room were connected completely, never even spoke about this. Both had kids who'd struggled with X, Y, or Z, but they were very similar. And it was like, that's what leadership is. It's at your top table of your organisations, of head of your MDs of your company's been there, say, you know what, I've struggled with this. One of them had been through something horrendous, right? Horrendous, while dealing with one of the company's biggest problems at the same time, and not one person in the team know about it. So as a leader there, she needs to be courageous enough to say to her team, listen, guys, I'm still going to get this done, but this is what I've got going on as well. And I think that's a great lesson in that it filters down. So if at any point, and I think they're a great example, Lloyd's Banking Group, Antonio, I don't want to try pronounce his last name, the old CEO of Lloyd's, he openly came out about his mental health. And we call it coming out. you know, people who have a struggle with sexuality, they talk about a feeling of coming out. And I often think it's the same with mental health. It's like a very, because you're coming out about an identity, aren't you? Like, this is who I am right now. This is what I'm struggling with right now. And it's having the courage and the vulnerability to be able to say, this is who I am. And that's what that leader did, which then made a movement at Lloyd's, which if top CEO was on X, Y, or Z can come out and say that. Clearly, that's giving us all permission. So I think as leaders, it's about giving permission to be able to be your vulnerable self.
Brilliant. So I think what I was saying there, like, to be a strong leader, it's about showing that vulnerability, isn't it? And about being open. And it's not a weakness to talk about these issues, but it shows real strength, doesn't it, in terms of businesses. And I wonder whether, Nigel, from your perspective, from speaking to trade associations, like, how's the kind of conversation around mental health sort of shifted during your last couple of decades?
I think, you know, I mean, look, the partnerships team here, you know, we deal with 100+ trade associations. Some are quite small, some are fairly large, you know, and where I think the progressive trade associations kind of come into play, you know, I think there is, you mentioned this piece about having this kind of top level down awareness of you're actually, you know, whether you're a CEO or, you know, operating officer, whatever it could be. I think sometimes some of the trade associations might have, right, okay, well, I've got a sort of trade association out. I've got my own staff, but they've got another level of, actually, I need to appear, you know, strong and correct for my members as well, because, you know, I don't want to appear as a trade association that I'm potentially either not doing what they want me to do, you know, because a trade association lives and dies by its members, effectively. But I think the progressive trade associations we work with, you know, whether it's some that have come to us to say, can you help us out with this because of our, you know, the webinars that we do or the employee assistance programs or whatever. But I think there's more and more, you know, especially the last kind of 4 or 5 years, there's more coming to us saying, what do we do about this? You know, what you know, even if it's just seeking a network about what do other trade associations do. So I put trade associations in touch with other ones who, yeah, okay, well, here's what we do. Here's how, you know, mental health first aiders, whatever it could be. But there's definitely more of a progression now on this awareness of, like you've said it before, yeah, actually, you know, I might be having a really bad day, you know, and I don't want to impinge upon, because it'd be another question that I put to yourself, actually, you know, disability. Do you think people find it difficult to separate at work, bringing a social or kind of a non-work issue into the workplace? I think, you know, I think some people might find that difficult, and I don't think trade associations would be any different.
Yeah, and I don't think the movement needs to be, everyone needs to come into work and tell everyone about the problems.
Yeah.
I don't actually think it needs to be that, right? I don't think suddenly we've got to start dancing around like Poppy from Trolls, throwing stardust on each other and telling each other life's going to be great. Like, and suddenly, like, ultimately, I think what we've got to get his head around here is that everyone is employed to do a job, right? Me coming here on this podcast today, regardless of what I've got going on personally, this needs doing, right? Because we made a commitment, we made a pledge to each other as a partnership. We're gonna do some stuff together, and I think sometimes we miss that bit. So this commitments that still need doing, right? But when it starts to affect your work life, or vice versa, when work starts to affect your personal life, there needs to be a space that you feel comfortable enough to deal with it. So if your space is that you've got a good EAP system and that you've got a good resource network within work, or you've got a good relationship with your manager, bring that to them. Right, and have a chat with them. If it works getting too much and you don't feel like you can talk about it at work, an Andy's Man Club, a Women's Wellbeing Club, your GP. So, like, we do limit a time with more resources than ever humanly possible, right? You can even go on YouTube, you can go on apps. There's so much headspace, like the amount of apps you could just start reading off now. But you've got to consistently do that stuff, haven't you?
Yeah.
So, I just think that sometimes what we try and do, and I'm going to speak openly here, is this is my opinion. None of it's ever necessarily fact is. I believe that what a lot of people in life do is, if we can reverse the mirror, and if I could say it's work's problem, or it's authority's problem, or it's government's problem, that takes it away then from me having to do anything. Because if I can sit and say, yeah, work's doing this, which there might be, right? They might be got some policies in place that aren't the best, but sitting and necessarily talking about it, I ain't going to change them. You know, you've got to challenge it in the right way. But what I think is that we've got to work on everything within our power to affect is, and that's how Andy's Man Club started, right? Exact same way. Is there a space where nationally where men meet and talk? Just men? No, there weren't, right? That I knew of, that were easily accessible. Was there psychotherapists? Was there GPs? Was there counselling services? Was there 100 different results? Yes. But was there this space where men only, and in a world of equality, it's very hard just to create something now just for a certain sex or type of group, but we're going to try to do this one thing. And that was the volume of that. But And everyone should say to me, but what, this weird question is to get asked all the time on radio interviews and TV, what do you think the government could do about it? I'm not bothered. Me telling you about what I think.
Well, you've got the ownership of that. So it's, I'm going to take that step. And, you know, it goes back to your point before about you get to a stage where, I've run out of it. Not excuses might be the wrong word, but actually it's on me now.
If
so I need to try and do this.
Government should do this, government should do that. Does that mean government are going to do it? Probably not. But actually, and if you look at it like this now, which is really nice, if I keep, or my organisation, or anyone in here, if we keep doing the right things for the right reason, right intentions, who knows? So now we are sat at tables where we're influencing policy. So now actually, instead of me focusing on bagging government and doing this, actually, let's just focus on that shit. You've
got a legacy now, wouldn't you? Yeah.
I got asked on another podcast recently, Fall, I said, what should society do more? I said, who's society? And then, what do you mean? I said, well, you just said, what can society do? I said, who's the society talking about? I tell you four can do. You four can start doing everything you're talking to me about. And if you four do that, your society's going to be a lot better place, isn't it? Your society. And they went, yeah. I said, that, putting it on this imaginary thing, society need to get men to talk about. Who's society? So actually, if I had to go on a shoot, I'm going to try and make my kids speak better. They're going to speak better. Maybe they'll speak to their friends better. Then suddenly it's a butterfly effect.
Spreads, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes enough, I can remember myself and Nigel worked together quite closely during the pandemic, and it felt super, super busy at times, as no doubt did for a lot of people, helping a lot of clients with health and safety HR changes, and we were getting a lot of questions from partners. And I can remember sometimes
every day it did feel
overwhelming, but I think the thing that always resonated with myself was Nigel always saying, control the controllables. If we can do everything, it probably comes back to the point around starting things like sleep. If we can focus on all the things that are in our gift to do every day. That's only, felt good. And in a way, Nigel, that was, directly talking, myself coming to yourself and saying, oh, I'm struggling. It was just, taking a bit of advice and, picking up the phone and, often did like that, particularly when we didn't have that face-to-face contact, just actually being able to hear somebody's voice or have a Teams call and have, the things that we all did, like the quizzes, which probably by the end of the end of the pandemic, we're all sick of the quizzes. But it was nice to have that network of people to, I'm
still sure you cheated on half of them, mate, but it's a good point, though, because it was that whole piece around, we weren't in the office and, we couldn't just give you that, tap on the chat, how are you getting on, all right, good to see you, thanks very much. But I think it showed the strength of, your marketing team, the partnerships team, Aid or, Pete and the rest of the guys, Rosie and all that stuff as well, who, because we were all kind of quite conscious about, you made your point about checking in on people, but it wasn't necessarily checking in on people. It was, we kind of did it, okay, we've got to get this stuff done. Let's get it done. But let's not overly worry about all the stuff that's going on. Can I do something for you? What do you need from me? It still frustrates me now when these guys are emailing me at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And I'll proactively go, stop working. What are you doing?
Yes.
What are you doing? I'm here trying to sort out some stuff or whatever, or I'm chilling out, don't click my work brain on. You shouldn't be having your work brain on, and I think it was that kind of me taking that positive step to go, I'll reply to that in the morning. No, actually, do you know what? I'm going to tell you, turn your phone off.
Yes.
Get out of that work frame headset, get your own stuff on. You're busy enough now with your little and stuff. That's your priority piece. Work comes to an end, then you stop. You do your family stuff and do your stuff that you do need to do
100%.
Then you wake up the next morning, then you get your work head on back on.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something I've learned. I mean, not like everyone, I think that we start with classic work life balance, isn't it? And you mentioned around Ironman training and marathon training. I think certainly when I first became a parent, or I had promotions and things at work, I did stop doing those things that I enjoyed, and I did find that my work ended up suffering more as a result, because I was trying to be this perfect person at work, but then I didn't have that opportunity to let off some steam and go for a run in the morning. Or So I think, we are lucky as a company, we do encourage that work-life balance, and we've got things in the office. We have online yoga in the office, and we're doing the Manchester 10K at work. So I think we are lucky that, and things like mental health first aid is that, we're part of a business that acknowledges that, these are important things.
No one kind of shoves it down our throat either, which I think is a good thing. So it's like, I'm like I said, I ain't going to do a 10K. I might do some yoga and I might hurt myself, right? Mm-hmm. But no one's forced it down my throat. It's just this, here's some stuff you can try it. There's some of the bite-sized sessions or whatever it could be. And it's almost what I really love about the business and how we've grown over the 20 odd years or 22 years since I've been here is we've gone from not really any resources in place to now where we're at, actually, look, here's some stuff, and we're quite aware that we've got different ages, different capabilities, whatever you want. We've got such a broad spectrum of boys and girls working for us now. you know, we're trying to go, here are some things. You're more than welcome to come and have a look at this if you want.
Yep.
And we're not going to be critical or this, that, and the other. It's just kind of plopped in your inbox. So it's there, you know, and you know it's there. And if you want to engage with it, have a chinwag. But also people are coming back to everyone going, but if you think there's other stuff that you want to do, you know, let us know, have a look, and we'll try and work something out that suits that person. So there's this real kind of focus on this individuality piece and not this whole kind of, you know, all men are the same because we're not.
No.
You know, and your point about, well, what is society? Oh, God, that's the most diverse question you could ever see. You know, you could go 15 miles down the road and society is totally different somewhere than say it is here in Wunslow, but...
You have multiple sites. You've got Citation Society, your Fundless Society, your Rugby Society, Cricket Society.
Everything.
All different.
You know, your social group, all different societies and stuff like that. But I think this, you know, your point around, I know, and tongue in cheek, you know, hopefully the guys will say it, I'm not serious at all. But when I go home and there's some certain stuff that I've got to deal with, you know, I shut work off. And if I need to be serious at home with some stuff that's going on, it's, you know, I think the people in this room would go, that's not the work knowledge that we know. But it's the knives that I have to be at that point in time, depending upon what's going on. You know, and sometimes that kind of flip of the coin can be quite difficult. And I'm very conscious that I don't want to bring that back into the workplace because I've got my work hat on. I don't want to be pinned, you know, and I don't want any, and rightly or wrongly, I'd never want any of these guys or my team to go, Nigel's not seeing himself today.
Yep.
But that might be a thing of, you know, once we have this discussion about, but actually, I might start coming in and go, no, you're right. Well, not really. I'm not. Yeah.
A rough time at home. This is what's going on.
Yeah.
People can give you a bit of breathing space. Oh, even just say, do you want to go for a walk at dinner time?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we overcomplicate, you know, and I think all the stuff you have mentioned there is phenomenal, isn't it? What you are putting on at work or what work's attempting to put on for you is to have that space. But I think sometimes it's as simple as you saying to Cam, okay, a bit rattled this morning, you know, Cam going, all right, girls, get a brew and have a little walk. For a little tomato, especially on a day like today.
Yeah.
Get outside, sunshine on your face, you know, have a bit of breathing space, have a nap. Just think sometimes even just having a chat about it, even if it's not to fix it, even if you're going to go through a relationship breakdown or life's not great or your kids are hard working, just offloading a little bit of burden sometimes just helps you feel a little bit more and it gives you a bit more clarity. I think a lot of us make decisions in emotional states that we later regret, rather than just giving us time just to get rid of what the anger side of it or the stressful side of it or the frustration. Breathe.
Yeah.
And actually, what's the logical thing I can do here? But you can never make them decisions in that emotional state, I think, you know, and then you come back to work, you're probably going to have a better afternoon at work. Because what's great about work, and I'm thinking a bit more than you're saying, is there is the camaraderie side of work, just like about, but structure, purpose, getting paid.
Yeah.
I think we've done, you know, I think we spend so much time at work talking about like the S and Terran's big purpose side. Actually, everyone who comes to work comes to get paid.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Just like one day we'd have woke up with us oats and wanted to build a bit of a bigger oats and someone could have been doctor on that little tribe that we had. And that's all we're doing now. We're just creating different styles of tribes, aren't we? And okay, it's really okay to get paid, isn't it? It's really like a dirty thing now that, well, work's got a purpose. We've got to be helping companies, which is great. You used to do that. But you also get to go and spend weekend with your family and go buy ice cream on Saturday if you go for a walk or bring baby for a walk, you know, and that's okay as well. And I think that's enough purpose sometimes as well, just to be coming to work every day, knowing that as a result of this, I'm working hard and I'll get the reward end of the month for it.
And we need it because Gale's coffee ain't cheap. other brands of coffee are available.
Other brands of coffee are available. One thing I was in, and you touched upon it a little bit earlier, Luke, around like men's mental health. And from your experience, like, do you think like employees and business leaders need to have a different policy or a different approach when it comes to men's mental health? Or do you think things can be looked at a little bit more holistically?
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily needs to be any different. I think health is health, whether that's from a men's perspective or women's. You know, you could actually argue that women have got it tougher than us. Throughout a variety of different aspects, from monthly cycles to menopause, you know, to also the combating of guilt of having a career, being a mother, a potential mother, so many different balancing things for a woman that actually what men maybe need to do is actually just have an appreciation of that.
Mm.
But we also just need to take a bit of ownership of that. We've got to be at a point in our lives where we're cool from what you said a minute ago. I think that answered it. You know, And Nige needs to be able to come into work sometimes and be like, let a bit of steam off and go for a walk. We're fortunate as men that we don't have the same level of hormones and different times and cycles in our lives and monthly life that affects us on a big scale. We just have these other burdens, don't we? Because we're trying to be providers, we're trying to be protectors. Mm. And the world's changing. And that's what's becoming difficult for men. The world is changing with the evolution of equality, which is great in many aspects. But, you know, I think men sometimes are struggling to find their place now. And that's another conversation, you know, a difficult thing. And I think adolescence program, which has been on with Stephen Graham, is sort of highlighting that for young men. Where do they fit in? Misogyny and where do they treat women and respect, I think, is a really big aspect. So I think there's a lot of work for men to do on standards, on values, which need to change maybe from our granddad's days, you know, from our father's days. It needs to, maybe need to adopt, as you said, a more realistic approach. But you said it earlier, great, I'm not going to go do, he's not going to do a 10K or a thing. I might love, in fact, I love running. And I love running even as a big man because it gives me a chance to go home and go, were I the best dad possible there? Maybe not. Were I the best leader? No, I need to go away and think about that. And your clarity might be going for a walk with your dog.
I was just about to say, I'll take my dash in for a walk, you know, and it's like, you know, that's the one thing, get up. He's happy to see me wherever we go. Come on then, dad, let's go. You know, and I've told the dog things that I haven't told my wife, my dad, family members, this, that, and the other, you know, and it's that non-judgmental, looks like you're giddy, thanks very much, clear my head, quiet. So we don't go out with headphones on or anything like that. I just, you know, you're breathing. You said breathe.
Yeah.
So walk around, this, that, and the other. Doesn't matter if it's raining. There's a park local to me in Alty. So we go around, do a couple of laps of that. Say hello to some dogs and I come back. And that's sort of the one thing I always kind of feel refreshed on, you know. And weirdly, because if nothing else, the dog's appreciative of what I've done, you know, and whether that's just a half an hour walk, you know, someone's appreciative of what I've done for them, even though it's a dog.
So I think that's your self-awareness, though, isn't it, to know when you need that? Because living in a culture now, at times, from what you mentioned before, you know, we mentioned about grandparents, parents, and generational stuff, there can often be this concept of manning up. And I think that means different things to different people. I often think that two sides, I want to touch on this, and I can see what you guys think. But I think there's a side of that we need to break down this idea that you've just got to get on with it, because you don't. You know, you need to deal with whatever's going on. But then there's also a side of, as a man or woman, you've still got to have responsibilities. So if you've got kids, if you've got a job, you've still got a duty to do those things. But you don't have to do it in a way where you pretend that nothing's going on in life. And I think what we often forget is, you know, when people say, oh, well, my granddad was like this, but your granddad probably was in a war where they wouldn't have been allowed to show him, or they were dealing with such despair and such trauma that it would have been much easier to blank that out. I work in prisons where prison officers, it's much easier to blank out what's going on than have, you know, than understand, because no one outside of that prison would understand or have an appreciation for what they have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. So I think that what we've got to do is take the positive lessons of maybe some of the standards and values our grandparents had or those before us, but then have a role reverse of is this term of just pretending everything's okay and manning up in that sense acceptable, which I don't think it is. So I think what we've got to do is two sides of it. This is where the balance comes. One is get to a point where we can accept we've got a problem, acknowledge it, deal with it in a way, however that seems fit for you, whether it's through an EAP system, whether it, you know, taking time for yourself, going for a walk with your dog, you know, and having that time to space and process what's going on, while having an awareness that I've got to do that because I have commitments, I have responsibilities, I have a duty.
Still got a home life, you know, I'm still going to go back, now my kids are still going to be there. The requirements for me to do what I need to do day to day are still going to be there.
100%.
Yeah, so that differing, well, splitting it out is, you know, it's quite a good way of putting it. So, I mean, I personally don't like the phrase of kind of man up, you know, so what does that mean? I think, you know, like you said, there's a whole perception piece around, well, all right, if I do something, does that, you know, am I trying to convince you that I've manned up? You know, am I going to come back and you're going to mark me on this and give you, oh, 8 out of 10, you've kind of manned up, but not quite. Well, what does that mean to the person that's telling you that? You know, if you want me to man up, well, I'll kind of decide my own levels on what I need to do to get to the outcome I need to get to. You know, don't kind of push on me this ability to man up. You know, I don't say that to my kids. I don't think I ever will. But what I will do is I'll always try and distill in them from an early age, and because my dad did it, my uncles did it, you know, I lost one of my uncles you know, last year, and he was always one that told me, you know, you set your own boundaries and your own levels, and then you decide whether you've done that. You know, it's not something that's not for someone else to tell you, I think you have or I think you haven't. But I'll always just tell my kids, your responsibilities, you know, what you need to do to get there. Like I said, you know, if I've had this horrendous week or this horrendous last year, whatever it was, whatever time frame I'm in, my responsibilities are still there, whether it's my kids, whether it's my wife, whether it's my mum, you know, so, you know, mum's in a care home, she's got progressive dementia. My responsibility to her and my dad are only going to increase, yep. You know, and that's something that, you know, I haven't really spoken about to friends and family about it. You know, it's how your mum, oh yeah, she's all right. Yeah, she's in a care home. But, you know, but I won't say there's that progressive thing around it. So as more responsibilities kind of layer up, hopefully no one's going to say, actually, you could you know, man up a bit about it and whatnot. But I like your analogy of saying, well, there, you know, there's stuff that you can do, but then, you know, but your underlying responsibilities are still going to be there. And I hadn't really thought about it like that. You know, I could wake up every day, I've manned up, yeah, but I've still got stuff to do at home.
Yep. And I think the big piece there was, is that what's going on with your mum's not nice.
No, it's crazy. And I think it's mad.
There's got to be a level of empathy or point in your tribe. You know, I don't mean necessarily a partner and kids, but your mates, where you can still, as we spoke earlier, even off this, about having banter, but where you can have a point. Because I think for me, when I'm going through bad stuff, I like humour, right? That's my,
snap. Right? Yeah, yeah.
So I like someone to make me laugh about that situation and vice versa. You know, even though I'm the Andy's Man Club guy, it's okay to talk about, when my friends talk to me about something, we will find a way to have a laugh in some form of way, right? And they always leave feeling bad. Even my own mum. You know, when she had a bit of a scare about something, I made a joke to her, which to anyone outside would have seemed really inappropriate. She read off, and she's like, I needed that. Because all I've done for the last 4 or 5 weeks even is ruminate about how
just
bad
the situation could be.
And you've just broke the ice by making me laugh. And I think, this is where they've got to have many elements to this. There's got to be a space where you can process it. What your dog, deal with it. You might want to be able to make some people. Might even be a point where you get to a vulnerable point of being able to speak to work and say, this is what's happening with my mum. My responsibilities for her are going to increase. Is there some adaptations we can make? I'll still get my job done, but is there adaptations we can make? Because that's when you find out where your leadership's at.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, talk about what can leaders do. Well, here's a situation that's not going to occur every day for every employee. It's very rare occasion. It's not mean that you're going to suddenly go from working 40 hours and taking piss for him, but you've got a mum that needs caring for.
Yeah. It's
your responsibility. But also, you need your kids to be provided for, which we spoke about earlier, in an house over the head. And this is the constant throwing forward, juggling balls, but then trying to just catch two or three.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's quite a nice little kind of like kind of snapshot of the fact that what I talk to work about now and what I need now from work is markedly different from when I started 22 years ago. You know, I've now got kids, I've now got elderly relatives, or elderly parents, you know, I've got a wife now that, you know, that would need some support last year and whatnot for menopause thing, you know, you go and chat to a bloke about how are you going to help your wife or your partner through the menopause? What a mile. You know, I did a lot of learning on that. You know, we did sessions on menopause, you know, I watched some of that. Oh, okay. And that was, so I said to the rest of the guys, anyone that's, you know, a chat needs to go and watch this, just to understand it, you know, and you know, not just saying it because we're on the podcast and stuff, but work have just been, look, nice, do what you need. We know you're going to get the stuff done. What do you need from us? You know, take this, take that time. Do you need any other support? Here it is. And like I said before, it wasn't rammed down my throat. It was, right, it's there. Just leave it there. You know who to speak to, whether it's my immediate boss, whether it's my colleagues, whether it's group HR or whatever. They're all like, and hopefully the rest of the team within Citation think that it's, if I need to speak to somebody, I can do. And I've got my own way of dealing with things. You know, because like you said, we've just got such a broad spectrum of the workforce that we've got. You know, going back to the whole kind of man up piece, I don't think anyone in my work kind of network would tell me to man up, because I think, you know, that they know that.
Yeah, I think it's society. Yeah, it's sort of going that anyway. I think we've thrown it out there, but actually, generally speaking, most people are actually becoming much cleverer and much more open to discuss about mental health. And when you mentioned menopause, I thought what's really interesting, because we talk about positives and negatives we can take from anyone. I think with the equality movement with male and females in workplace, I think what's actually really beautiful about what women do is, especially in the work I do, when I go to a workplace, they're really interested in how they can support the dads, the brothers, the sons, the husbands. Men are often as open to what they can do for their wives, right? Or partners or daughters, and, you know, understanding that. And I remember my daughter starting to ask questions about you know, even difficult speaking as a man. So then I was like, cool about it. So I'm like, you know what, that's happening. It's the most natural thing that can happen, cycles. And then, you know, speaking to my partner about it and understanding the terminology. And my daughter then don't have to feel weird talking to me about
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and, you know, I think when that time comes for menopause, having a good understanding of that and how you can support, because that, that role's going to reverse at some point when the next part of men's mental health. So
yeah,
I think that were a really, really nice, nice thing for you to do, actually, to go and research and try out you navigate through that. Probably a horrendous time for you both, you know, as much your partner as you. And I often had a conversation with someone actually recently, and they were talking about, you know, beautiful way to think of this. So we'll use the menopause, well, in fact, we'll use the menopause analogy, but you can relate it better. You know, often when we hear someone who's beat cancer, we are from the husband or the wife, like, you know, the person who's beat it. You know, this is what I went through. But you never often hear about the partner who was with them for that time. Or I went through a drug addiction problem. Okay, but how was it for your mum? How were you dealing with that? And I think sometimes, like, there's often that, you know, that can be as big a factor on someone's mental health as the person who's dealing with himself. Because, you know, they're confused because they feel like they've let you down, or they want to be there for you. They're also grieving that old you. And I think that's a really big thing. So I think that were a really nice analogy for what you've done for your partner.
Yeah, and it was important, you know, because it's like, you know, the last thing I want to see is my wife struggle through something because I'm conscious that it's going to affect the kids, you know, and what I never wanted to do was just to try and detail. And we talked about it, like, with my kids. I said, look, you know, mummy's struggling a bit. She's going through this scenario, by the way, work's not great with her, thanks very much, this, that, and the other. And my kids were like, you know, what can we do to help? And one of the hardest things I said to my kids was, at some point, I remember saying, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, guys. You know, and then there's me going, right, well, I've kind of failed providing my kids with an answer to that situation. I don't know how to help my wife out. And then there's me going, right, well, am I a spare part here? Then going back to the point I've been made about sleep right at the start, God, I'm knackered now. I lie down to sleep. And then your brain goes, right, Nige, let me tell you all the things you're worried about. And bang. And then, oh, right, crikey. You know, so it's a whole cyclical thing. But, you know, going back to the dog walk, God, come on, get your head straight. Whether you like it or not, there's that responsibilities there. So you need to work out how you're going to deal with that. And it was one piece at a time. Right, okay, well, I've done that. Move on to that bit. Done that. Move on to that bit. Talk to my wife. Oh, Tash, you know, what do you need from me here? You know, in sickness and in health, what can I do? And sometimes she would just go, oh, just leave it be for a bit. I'm all right. Or actually, sometimes I need you to do this to, like, help me out of it here. You know, what can I do? And it wasn't a case of in a face. It was, right, I'm ready for you to tell me what you need me to do. And when she went, look, thanks, I appreciate that, I've got it. That was a kind of a big kind of sanity point for me, where I went, right, I don't have to worry about doing too much stuff here. When my wife's ready to come and tell me what she needs, she will do.
Yep.
And that was like a real weight off my shoulders, because I could go back to the kids to say, right, here's what I think mummy needs. Here's what we need to do to make sure she's all right. You know, and now we're out of that kind of woods now.
Yep.
She's got a job sorted out, this, that, and the other. I mean, all right, you know, there's other bits and bobs going on with family members, like we mentioned before, but I've got a mechanism now where I'm not fussing around her to say, right, what do you need? What can I do? Oh my God, thanks. Because that just escalates my own kind of, like, levels of anxiety and stuff like that. So we're at this stage now where we've leveled it out, and looking back for where we were 12 months ago, it's night and day. Night and day difference.
Love that.
Yeah, no, that's definitely super interesting. I've certainly, no doubt, you know, I've supported my wife, you know, returning to work. I think that's been a real transition, and, you know, working night shifts and things. I think I've definitely found myself having to, you know, having to really try and empathise a lot more with her. One of the things I wanted to mention is, obviously, we've touched on loads of themes today, so we'll have loads of links in the chat to, you know, the Andy's Man Clubs groups. I think on your website, Luke, you can find your local groups, obviously links to Ambler training. I wonder if yourselves had, I'm going to say, one takeaway. It feels like it's such a complex topic, it's probably hard to distill it into one takeaway, but if you wanted, you know, business leaders and people that are listening to take something away from today's podcast, like, what do you guys think is the kind of big thing you'd like them to come away and kind of do or change or think about in the future?
I think, I mean, look, I'll speak about it from kind of like an employee perspective, but I think what I value in the business that I've been with, I mean, look, I know it might not be the right person to ask because I've worked for one business and one brand for 20 odd years and stuff, but I think it's, you know, I really appreciate as a business the fact that there is a this kind of, it's not paying lip service to it. It's a genuine, right, we'll try and do some stuff for you. What do you need? Tell us what you need and whatnot as well. And I think there's a genuine benefit in not deciding from a top level, here's what we're going to do because we think this is going to fit everybody. We as Citation have really kind of involved everyone from, you know, whether you've been here 3 months or 23 years, 30 years or whatever, into formulating this approach on what do we need to provide our team as a business, you know, and we're not just said, right, that's the offering and it's going to stop. It's more than developed over the years. So I think this kind of, this ongoing involvement of your workforce to say, right, how are we going to provide some out, whether it's an outlet or whether it's a, you know, some content or whatever you want to call it, but there are options available to you as an individual that you can embrace, and we're not going to judge you, and you can make use of it. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't work, go back and tell us what you might need.
And how about yourself, Luke?
I think mine would be that everyone ain't always going to be 10 out of 10, but their 5 out of 10 out of there might be their 10 out of 10. That might be their 100. There's a saying that I like and dislike all in one. It's okay not to be okay. And I'll explain what I mean by that. It is okay not to be okay. Like, and in fact, let's do it a different way, because we don't want life to be okay, we want it to be good. So it's okay not to be good all the time, but it's not okay to stay there. And what I mean by that is if you're going up motorway, you stop at services, you go into our services to service what you need in that moment, whether it be a coffee at that point, some fuel, put a bit of extra water in your, whatever they're called, windscreen wipers and rest of it. But then you get charged for staying there too long, and you don't stay there too long. You definitely don't want to stay in the motels and services. So you've got to get your ass back on that road, because we're all moving forward and you can't stagnate. So I think you've got to have your moments where you take time for yourself, find out what your needs are, find out how you need servicing, and then keep moving forward. So yeah, it's okay to accept there's a problem, you know, and that, you know, it's okay, but it's also a necessity to deal with your problem. So what can leaders do? Be vulnerable themselves, create an empathetic culture, and create a culture where that if someone is dealing with something, then they know you've got the back. I want my people in my organisations to know that I'm in trenches with them no matter what, and I'll be sat there while we're getting bullets fired at us, telling jokes along the way. So if we're rounding this off, let's round it off on a really dark thing, that we're all going to die, which then means that how beautiful that is that we've still got each and every day, because some people would give, you know, anything to have another day on this planet, wouldn't it? And we've got that at that moment. So smile a little bit more, accept we're going to have shit in life, and move forward.
Amazing, thank you. It feels like a brilliant note. And thank you so much. I think it's been a, you know, brilliant conversation. And you know, we've enjoyed, and hopefully you've enjoyed listening as well. As I say, well, if you've got any questions for Luke, you've got any questions that you want to ask, you know, we can drop details in the chat, and we'll get those over to him. And equally, you know, any kind of relevant links to any of the things we've talked about, we'll have in the chat. But otherwise, thank you. You know, it's been amazing to have this conversation today. I've really enjoyed having it. Hopefully yourself, Stab, as well.
100%.
Yeah, too, right.
No doubt the start of an exciting partnership between Amundi's Mind Club and Citation.
100%. Thanks for having
us. No worries.
Thank you.